Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to this recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, July the 28th, 2009. And this is hour 96 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis, and hello to everyone following these talks and discussions, actually more than that. Sometimes they end up becoming a pathway of celestial intelligence, you might say, knowledge that comes real time as I speak. But we'll see if that should happen tonight or right now. But aloha to all.
So in other words, this is you right now, not the celestial.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Well, hello. Sorry we didn't get to record last week. Michael's mother's in a nursing home, and they had to do a little procedure, and he wanted to stay with her. But last week was the 40 years ago is, let me turn my volume down. 40 years ago was when the U.S. sent three men to the moon, walked around, collected some rocks, and that was the summer of 1969. I was living aboard the aircraft carrier USS Saratoga, and we were in the Mediterranean, so I heard like nothing in the news, absolutely nothing. But I feel we really went there, but we could not afford to come back without pictures. And there's a documentary that's linked on this hour that it's called The Dark Side of the Moon, and it's how they faked the photographs because they didn't want to risk not coming back with pictures, and it was Richard Nixon's decision to do that. And there's quite a few interesting characters on there. Donald Rumsfeld, Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, Richard Nixon and his secretary, Lawrence Eagleburger, Richard Helms, Vernon Walters, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin and his wife, Stanley Kubrick and his wife, and Stanley's men who worked alongside him in the production of 2001 A Space Odyssey. But this was leaving the Earth and going to the moon. We'd been looking at the moon for years, and it's very interesting that the moon, when you look at the moon and you look at the sun, they're the exact same size viewed from Earth. That
yeah, it's interesting how the moon doesn't rotate, and
it faces
the Earth all the time.
Well, it rotates one time.
Yeah.
For every orbit, it's exactly the same amount of seconds. And I say that because I asked my neighbor, who's a mathematician, for advanced studies at Princeton. He's the head of the math department. So I asked him and his wife one night, I'm thinking of a number between 3 million and 4 million. What's the likelihood of both of them getting that number? And that's what the moon is doing. It rotates on its axis one time, a certain amount of seconds, and the same amount of seconds it takes to revolve all the way around the Earth. It's like 27 days. But it's very interesting, that piece on the moon, and we're really lucky to have the moon. And Michael sees the exact same moon. Isn't that right, Michael?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So you shot by the moon when you were out there with Nella?
Oh, yeah. The moon was a key device that they used. Because I wasn't convinced that I was fully... Because there wasn't any feeling of motion. Anyone who's flown in an aircraft, any kind of aircraft, will feel some motion. And there wasn't any feeling of motion. I wasn't convinced that, they had been moving off of Earth. They showed me the Earth and it getting smaller, and I kept telling them, "You're playing a movie. You know, this is something that I've seen on television, and of course I was at that age that we were followed the space race from Project Mercury all the way on through, and it wasn't something new. And of course the moon was part of the show. They showed me the moon again, and it said, yeah, I don't believe it is. And then they showed me the moon get really small and in relationship to the planet Earth, and I realized this is not a view that I had seen on television, you know, and I began to think I'm really out in space. So that was my experience on being on their craft and being trying to be convinced in a sweet way that I am not indeed still on planet Earth.
It was probably pretty funny to them, thinking, here we took this human off the Earth, show him the moon, and he still thinks he's on the Earth.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't want to believe it.
Yeah, it's because there's no movement. Well, couldn't we give him a movement?
Yeah, I mean, this is it's also a puzzling thing, because the containment of the fact that you're in the craft tells me maybe the craft really isn't moving. Maybe time and space are moving around the craft in their controlled way, so that movement and the laws of physics really don't get bent out of shape. But time and space do get distorted somewhat in a controlled manner, and as a result, you have no movement. You're really not moving. Everything else is being displaced in time and space around you, and that would occur if that were to happen. Anyway, that's just, I don't know that as a, you know, a fact. I'm just trying to think, how could that happen? Anyway, that's something else.
Riley said when they shot past the moon, it was almost like someone hit a soccer ball with their foot.
Mm-hmm.
It just flew by.
Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't try to convince him. It just made him see that. And of course, I'm not sure if he, you know, it went like I did, which after I realized that we were moving past the moon, it went opaque, the view went opaque, and I said, just sit here. And then next thing I know, I get invited, and there's Saturn in front of me, and I say, oh, we're at Saturn. And they were quite pleased that I knew where we were at Saturn. And and they showed me the destination, and I said, oh, you mean that light bulb thing out there? And they looked at me kind of funny, and said, I practically heard them say, that is not a light bulb. But anyway, it sure, if you look at the pictures that Cassini brought back, there's one shot that it really does look like a light bulb. Wouldn't you say so, Curtis?
Oh, yes. And I've always said it looks like they knew the NASA Space Center was telling the Cassini to take another picture and to turn to the telephoto lens.
Mm-hmm.
But the image of the sphere is no longer round, and it really looks like they put a little display on for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe it was a display also, because they wanted to show it to me in that manner. Of course, I didn't realize how large it was until we began to approach it, and then it really took on the dimensions that are far, far larger than I realized, that my estimates were way off. It was indeed huge. I mean, I could perceive it really hiding, unless it's hiding in plain sight, you might say, right now, where the moons are themselves, one of the moons in Saturn could be actually what I actually saw, and what was, you know, opening around it was the actual projected field, and then of course some other things were going on, like penetrating that field, which had, didn't have a crash to it at all. I thought we were going to crash right into it, but that didn't happen. And we just penetrated right in and landed.
I don't know if I ever asked you about the size of the spacecraft, and you said Tan and Nella were there. Was there also a robot pilot?
No, there wasn't a robot. There was another pilot who showed me where he was from, and he pointed up a spot where he said he was from. He didn't quite. He didn't look as much like Tan and Nella. You know, it was a little different, but he wasn't a machine. Real being, and he said that that's what he pointed out in the star system. In some ways, I know I spotted Orion's belt, you know, the three stars.
Mm-hmm.
Out there, and I spotted that right away, and I said, oh, and he was pointing me somewhere in that direction anyway. He was glad at least I got into the neighborhood.
Yeah,
but that's not where Tan and Nella were from. They pointed in a whole different area. But. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's another part of the journey, but ultimately it was for receiving the experience with them and bringing back the story of the reality of who they are and their intent and purpose and their makeup and the society and what they're all about and how they openly wanted to share their experience and their manner of, you might say, worship of God or First Source, because it really amounts to that in what I was able to account for. Yeah, because much of it is still in awe, and they don't have all the answers. They do function within a true domain of understanding and truth that is they open up to us at a little at a time, and we're gaining that knowledge. One of the most important knowledge, of course, is we're not alone. We're a speck out in space where there's so many more beings that have discovered much more truth and have been adopted in, were some never lost. We were the ones who were lost in space, lost in a divisive move out of a very rebellious overlord who decided he'd recreate a society that was essentially perfect, but tried to, you know, create another road to a development of society. Right now, we're seeing that experiment come to a head right now on Earth, and what that is the loss of control of our economy, which is one of the things that is required for a truly well-developed planet is to have a well-coordinated economy, and that's pretty much out of control right now. So anyway, that's another story. That is where we are right here, and you know, on Earth, living through that dimension. And it's not to say that they have no concern about it. They have actually had enough concern to give me a vision concerning its arrival, and it, because of that, they also are seeing another thing by sending that vision to me. Not only that it's prophetic, in other words, that it was before everything happened, but one in which says that it should happen and that I should find comfort in it, that it does happen. It's not a warning. It's saying that it will break forth with another opening into a much greater goodness not so slated in sandstone of the ancient Egyptian ways, you know, but one that breaks open, and instead of you seeing a sandy desert, which I zoomed in on, was a green forested area, which is much nicer to look at. So that's the picture that you have in front of us once these things break free of these basically false systems of pumping the blood of society, blood of economy around. The false, the stony heart being replaced with one of life and a living heart, a heart of flesh, as the old prophet said a long time ago. So anyway, that's my take on the situation right now. And more recently, in fact, a couple nights ago, I was being pressed to go and take a look at the clear night sky and put down my chaise lounge out there and just lay down and look up. And I said, yeah, it is pretty clear. I see pretty much all the stars. And then, zoom, here comes a funny-looking star-like, you know, just moving along. And I say, hello. And it stops, or nearly stops, and then curves around, and I say, hello. So it's been a while since. I wasn't really expecting it, but then I guess I was being told, come and take a look, and we'll come around. And total for the night was, I think, 4 different ones that came by. Yeah.
Hmm. So, do you live in a dark area there on Maui?
No. It's we've got quite a lot of street lights and traffic lights that light up the sky a bit. So there is a glow here and there, you know. But looking up, I did see it. That's nice. No moon. The moon had set already, so that's the reason that I had been able to observe the night sky much very clear. The Milky Way was clear to see. Interestingly enough, they followed the Milky Way, and it came in from the northern, and went toward the south, somewhat, kind of curved a bit.
And
then there was one that flashed, it's the fifth one, which was strange. It's like a strobe, like an aircraft strobe, but it just strobed once, and then it did it again, and I said, oh no. Is that a star? And it did it in another place. And then I said, that's interesting, and see if it's an aircraft, it'll keep on strobing, but that was only 2 strobes, so... And not pulse, they're kind of far apart, the pulse of light. It was about maybe 5 minutes before the next bright pulse came across. So, well, that's interesting, I said. I guess this is why I have to lie down here. And I received, I think from the second one, it really slowed down a lot. And I basically asked him a question, and it says the time is not yet, and then it sped up and went away. So anyway, they're in contact, so they're moving around out there and doing their observations and whatever else they are doing. So our celestial friends are still out there, getting more numerous. That's quite a lot for them just flying through, you know. They were like not out there to be seen. They're just, I think, on a project. Anyway, enough said.
Mm-hmm. So do you think they were aware of you being out there?
Well, yes, especially when I would address them, and they'd kind of slow down, or one of them, as I said the time's not yet.
Mm-hmm. And what type of communication did they give you when they said that?
Well, it wasn't like a broadcast, you know. It was telepathic. There's nothing unusual. To me, telepathic communication is not unusual because if you're conversing with a lot of these celestials, spend time with them and walk around with them, it becomes almost a normal affair.
Mm-hmm.
Conversing and their ability to understand you, even when you kind of confused and can't quite make out what you want to say, they may even perceive your thought line even before you can put words to it, which is pretty cool, you know. That's really neat about that. And come up with the right kinds of answers. Especially when the Dana came over and he understood right away that I was confused.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't quite understand the whole project of it because, you know, I'm trying to discover God. And they were trying to show me how they relate to God and their different dispositions or frame of self-reference experiences. And as a result, I've been looking on Earth to see their traces and have been finding it here and there. And in my world travels, and I'm quite amazed that their project has been is ongoing, and we are very nearing the time in which the adoption process, the grafting in process, coming back into the celestial home environment that we truly belong to, is coming to fruition. So, anyway, just to see them more often than not is very interesting. It's a way of them, you know, okay, sorry, call me out, come take a look, and there to come. And off they went. So anyway, that's enough of that.
Was it your thought adjuster that got you to go outside?
Yes, it's a mean of being aware, you know. Our thought adjuster is not necessarily the means of the communication, but it is through the similar channels that our awareness of their presence, their communication comes through.
And when they communicate with you this way, what part of your head do you hear them in?
I would more like hear them not so much in my head, you know, it's more like heartfelt.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's something like, you know, the energies that, you know, you said you sent to my mother, warm energies.
Yes.
And then my mother was, you know, somewhat, you know, down and out, not speaking or just sort of lying there. And then next thing you know, and when you, I noticed that she had, you know, started clapping and singing and being really lively. And then I read your email and I kind of put the two together and I said, oh, yeah, that's when you sent your warm energies.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of woke her up a bit, you know. And this spiritual energy is real. So you might say that if our friends speak to us telepathically, they're using a spiritual channel. A Urantia channel of awareness is what the Urantia book calls this level of awareness. It's somewhere between our natural being, because it functions in ourselves physically, but you can't locate it because it's a spiritual attachment to ourselves. And that's an interesting thing about spiritual attachment, is that when you get something that is perfectly alive, it's alive. And just when it dies, such as some animal or something that was very much alive at one time, and it dies, you know immediately that it dies. Where did that energy go? Where did that spirit of life go? That spiritual energy go? And if it's purely biologic, is that all there is? A chemical, electrochemical relation, or is there something more to it? And I'm saying there is more to it, and it is a functional part of us, and we don't have to repress it. We can actually participate in it, and that's one of the most important factors of the overrule of our ability to live in a society that they are in, our celestial friends are in. Because if we are ruled, we need, you know, laws and governances to function, then we don't really operate within their society, because their society operates in a spiritual plane and level, which is open and interfunctional one with another and throughout all. And this is what the seven psychic circles of cosmic and psychic attainment are about achieving that level of awareness. And then when that happens, there's a real ability to interface with them. Although they can interface with us, but we need to learn how to interface with the celestial beings. And many of them are only a little ways off from our physicality. Others are much further ahead, but I was lucky enough, I guess blessed enough, to have been introduced to so many of them. Not all of them, it's like just so many in number but and types, but they're the ones that I were introduced to were indeed real.
That's all just mind-boggling, to go out to Saturn and meet real people.
Yeah, real people, and that's exactly what I felt mm-hmm. to her. I'll never forget how I came back, and I was so saddened that I lost contact with these people, and I wasn't mm-hmm. with them anymore, but I realized that they wanted me. I have a project, and this is the project it's all about, just to make that awareness available to us, and not to disassociate many of the tools that were implanted in our society for us to attain the level of consciousness and the level of awareness and the spiritual energy and the spiritual maturity to interface and become a part of their celestial order. Yeah. So one of the things, as I said, was I was told to sit down and observe so many of them. And they just walked by me. I thought I would be, like a animal in a zoo, some curiosity. But they had no concern about me. They went about their business, and they knew I was there until finally got frustrated and stood up and grabbed one by the hand and he helped me right away and told me to sit down and. And a little while later comes a Dano down, walking down the spiral way, mm-hmm. and he was walking with these big giant guys, and that's when he said, "You look confused."
No, the Neptunians.
Yeah, that's what Riley calls them, the Neptunians.
Yeah,
you can call them the big Anunnaki or whatever you want to say.
Or the water.
They're human
people.
Looking, but just oversized.
He drew them with big legs and big feet.
Well, yeah, they got, just huge. They're well muscled,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they weren't lanky, tall. They were just, even if they were normal size, you'd think of them as a linebacker or something. Well built mm-hmm. guys.
And these guys eat and sleep like we do?
I don't know that because I didn't go and eat with them.
Mm-hmm.
Although I was with them, but that was in the classroom with the Dano. But I did eat something that was absolutely light. Very, very light. It's like a little thin wafer. And that was good enough, I guess.
What, like a cracker?
Not thinner than that. Kind of melted into my mouth. I kind of said, what did it again? My joke would be like, I must have had bad breath or something. Gave me some mint or something. But actually, mm-hmm. it was like that in thought, very light. mm-hmm. not much to it, but I was hungry at the time already, and they knew that, and then cooked me up a storm.
And what did that do for your satisfying your appetite?
Oh, immediately I didn't worry about being hungry anymore.
Well, I was just wondering what Riley said about them eating.
Well, Riley was with Ted and Nella for a lot longer than, you know, I was with this group. In fact, I was sort of like rushed through all the different levels as soon as I had, you know, basically passed the level. They moved me on, so I just kept moving up and up until I finally asked the right questions and you decided to ask more of the right questions. And then as soon as I was with the Dano, then real exploration and exposure began, and he would teach in something called just-in-time level of learning, where the level of learning meets you just when you are at that point of receptivity. In other words, a question and a receptivity match, and then the information is right there. And to take that, you know, walk down the hall, or and finally after the height of my information was the purpose of life and the creation of human beings and all of this, the idea of why we are, and then going in up to the highest level that was available, which is to be able to impose that question to the Veranda Deck observers, who are the what they call the most high observers and the most high. And it was in the Bible, they call that the secret place of the most high. And if you go into the secret place of the most high or dwell within the secret place of the most high, then you are in the shadow of the Almighty or the first source. And essentially, the shadow is full of light, so it's not a dark place at all. But and essentially, that means that you're very close to attaining that knowledge. But anyway, the answer was very simple, was to ascend to their position in reality, who they are, to become like them. And that was quite a experience, because even the Dano, the teacher, had become a being of light, too. That is an amazing thing.
Are they looking forward to us being more like them?
Of course. That's our purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for us to live short lives, say, you know, my mother is like 91 years old. And that's, to them, like an instant in time. But the accomplishment that we can do within the body is an amazing accomplishment, because it builds... you see, what our life is more like the support system or the framework that we build eternity around. We build our light being around, our souls are developed, and really are developed here, and we need to develop them correctly. You know, usefully, in their image, you know. And as a result, we shouldn't have these short-term goals in our lives. Live our lives as full as we can, but never, you know, overruling the fact that we're gifted with this life, and take every chance we have to fold our wills into the will of the first source, into the will of God. And this is what I saw. These people never were in balance with first source. In fact, they are so attuned to first source, to God, that there is always this beautiful harmony and love. This is the atmosphere that you walk within, that you're in, and really is, you know, the life of their place. Without these beings in their, you know, in that celestial abode in the New Jerusalem, even if it is a city that set out there orbiting Saturn, it's really their lives and the way they organize the society that is really something that, oh, if we could just attain. But many times, I recognize some of that in our own society. But funny, it happens in areas which are not necessarily the most richest in terms of goods and, you know, our modern society, or, mm-hmm. you know, nice clothes and all that. I remember, you know, sitting next to these people, just my recent trip to Cambodia. Cambodia, what is the, what would you guess would be the per capita average, you know, income over there for a year?
And the dollars?
In dollars, U.S. dollars.
$200?
Per capita? Oh, well, you're way down, but it's about $1,100.
$1,100.
Yeah. So, what I did see was, yeah, there are a lot of people at that, but there's people above it and people below it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I saw was the people, you know, you get to know. I mean, there's a person that was sitting next to my wife on the bus. And we decided to take window seats, so we took window seats. Each of us had a window seat. And we were riding a bus for like 6 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, we were crossing from Phnom Penh to Siem Reap. We got an island. I always say, I live on an island. I mean, you cross the island in like, you know, 2 hours. Big deal. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go around and around and around, you go around the island. We never make a trip. So having mm-hmm. A long bus trip is unique for me.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway, there's this kid that comes on with a, you know, little bag full of, you know, her treats, and she's offering it to my wife, you know. And, oh, okay. And this other guy comes over, sits next to me, snacking on something. He offers that to me. And I go, wow, these people are pretty nice. They, you know, share stuff. You know, I don't have anything to share with them. And they don't care. But they got something to share. And so that's pretty neat. And that's something that doesn't happen on our kinds of bus trips, if you, you know, and working with strangers. So anyway, that's the richness of their society, and that I see as somewhat duplicating some of the feeling that I got at the New Jerusalem, is this openness and willingness to share with time and resource. But what for them was more like, I'll help you. You need help. I didn't know you need help. Okay, fine. You know, I'll get somebody. Just sit there, and here comes somebody who mm-hmm. they found, which was a really big guy. mm-hmm. Ended up being a really guy to help me explain, because I asked him one question. I said, what's going on here? And he said, okay, they went and found somebody who happened to be the Dano, top teacher there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the answer, and this was when I was ready to, you know, receive something. The answer, the question, some time, everything put together. That's why everything could get compressed into such a small amount of time and get the experiences that I needed, because everything I needed the answers for was they got the answers right there just in time. So anyway, that's going back to the New Jerusalem. In the field. So we are able to interface with them, but there's so much other things that get in the way that make us not, you know, more like not ready. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say we're not ready, but could we go outside and lay down, look at the stars?
Sure.
And
I mean,
see anything?
Explore that heaven, but doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they're going to show themselves.
Show themselves.
Yeah. That, you know, they might even call you out if you're ready and you've attain certain levels of psychic development. Mm-hmm. And they might call you out.
Well, it's always fun to see the International Space Station fly over or sail over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you see a lot of satellites in Hawaii.
Satellites are sometimes observed easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember looking at, as a kid, there was one satellite that was very easy to see. There weren't many up at the time. It was the Echo Balloon. You ever heard of the Echo Balloon? It was like a really aluminized balloon that expanded, and it was supposed to reflect our beam radio waves in, generally in the UFH, mm-hmm. microwave and UHF range, and get a signal bounced off of it. And, my dad tried with his VHF stuff and UHF stuff, but wasn't working very well. Although we could see it right above us. It was really bright. Bright. Actually, it was brighter than most of the stars. Yeah.
Wow.
And it moved. Yeah, it moved. That's how we could spot it. There it is. It's moving.
Hmm.
Yeah. So satellites go back with me quite a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they're visible to you, but the time isn't quite right yet.
Well, I'm not sure. I was just by myself while looking at them. So.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't bright. Satellites, I'm sure, can become very, very easily seen.
Mm-hmm.
When they kind of slow down and nearly stop, that's a strange satellite. They didn't quite turn around and come back, but...
Is that what they were doing?
Two of them in particular did.
Two?
Really come to a slowdown.
Uh-huh.
One of them, I'm fairly certain, was a satellite, because it just kept track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, "Wow, which?" And I went back to look which one it is. I couldn't find out which one it could have been, but there's just so many, you know. And there's the GPS constellation up there too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the constellation satellites, they all orbit.
Well, it's always amazing to hear about that craft that took you out to Saturn. I always want to try and what was it like in there?
It was interesting because I had one on the way back, I guess, after I had spent my time at the New Jerusalem. They gave me a lot more latitude in terms of searching around the place, but it was... a lot bigger than I thought it would have been. You know, it was more space to it. And indeed, there's quarters, living quarters, that were personal. Yeah, that it was in. And also areas which I was told not to go into, poke my head into them, and then I was surprised. And I spoke about those that a while back. But anyway, there was the fact that the ship was indeed a ship. You know, it was not some kind of a dream. I was literally taken there. In fact, I spent quite a time trying to making sure that I wouldn't, think it was some kind of a dream or some drummed up motion picture or something.
Mm-hmm.
They
had to make something very clear to you to get you to realize it.
Yeah, they wanted...
You're not dreaming.
Yeah, that's exactly the mindset that they wanted me to get. This is not a dream, and this neither is this some kind of a show where you're kidnapped and we're going to make you think that you're taking this trip. No,
mm-hmm.
This is not it at all. what do you need to prove it? And on the way back, and again, I also said, I'm not going to go straight back. I'm going to say, you're going to take me to Mars? It's on the way back. And they said, okay, they checked. And it didn't land on Mars, but they made sure that I was convinced that I had at least come within the distances of being above Mars and be able to see the detail of what today we can, you know, verify. It looks just like how, I remember it looked just like how I saw it. What we see in the Mars orbit, you know, pictures of Mars from orbit. Looks the same.
It would have been interesting if they would have taken you to the moon. You would have been able to really see what the gravity pull was and whether there was air on the moon to breathe that we hear rumors about sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's another thing. That wasn't their projected mission. Actually, the invite that Nellick had was, would you like to go and find out how things work with us and what things are about? And I guess the only hint that they gave me was that they had some operation. We have some operation here on the moon when we passed it. But it wasn't significant enough for me to go visit. It was sort of like not important.
So that was literally on the dark side of the moon, or the other side of the moon, not dark.
Well, no, they just mentioned the moon, yeah.
Oh, the moon.
Not specifically saying where it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It might. I suspect it's an old installation. Maybe before the New Jerusalem was set in place out there in Saturn.
So since it's an old installation, do you think they're the ones who had the moon
towed in and put in and hung in its place?
Well, either towed in, but especially spun at the speed it spins, so we never see anything else but one side.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't really know. that I can't answer, you know.
Because it would seem that they would want to stay in the shadows, so to speak, and not have us see them.
Well, if they were operating, you wouldn't want to be on the right side, you know. There's no advantage to, going around and having day and night there.
Well, it still gets day and night, we just only see one side.
Well, yeah, right. That's true, you get to day and night over there, the back side. When it's a new moon, then it's bright on the other side. That's true, yeah.
But that documentary, people should take a look at that. That's well worth the time to see. It is cut short a little bit. The original was a Google video, and at the end Nixon didn't think that the CIA men were supposed to be lost forever, but Nixon didn't think lost forever was enough, and just trying to keep it a secret.
Well, I didn't see that, so I can't comment on it.
Yeah, they have a lot of secrets they want to keep from us, and I'm always amazed at all the things we probably don't have a clue about, that they're doing such a great job. But because of the internet, it certainly has opened up a lot.
Yeah. Well, even like, one thing I want to comment on was the moon again. I think I made a mistake concerning the shadow of our Earth on the moon. Does leave the moon dark. But anyway,
the whole
mission that I'm on right now isn't to look into these kinds of conspiracy ideas or verify some of these things, these operations. it's really much, much more than that, because it's one of the things that may have been used as disinformation about UFOs and celestial beings. And you know, the greatest disinformation is that they're malevolent. They're enemies of Earth and enemies of the human race. And this is a big false statement. The biggest enemy of the human race lives right here on Earth. And that's certain beings who are able to implant various ideas in our human minds and lead us into a very, very, what you might say, confused civilization. And this is all part of the remnants of the Luciferian rule. And it still is very popular here. One of the things that I didn't hear or really get educated about was the devil and Lucifer. My greatest fear was when they named in the classroom environment, they named the New Jerusalem, and they said Jerusalem was the capital of Satania. And then I said, Satania? Satan? That's the devil. I'm in the wrong place. And then, you know, I was immediately calmed down by the Dano, who instructed that person who, the one guy that came up with that statement, that just hold it there. And then he says, don't worry about that. It's just a segment of the universe. And then and it didn't go much more than that. And I have to say that it is not Satan. It's Satanian. It's not Satan, you know. So, yeah. Sounds the same, but is not the same. So that little bit of panic was one time I remember I had that feeling of panic, like, oh my goodness, I'm in the wrong place. I guess then I hear even some people who study the Urantia book who come from Christian background, or you know, one that, you know, has been at least educated to enough to know that the name Satan and the devil are synonymous, get scared when they realize that this capital of this zone that we're living in, this zone of some 30 some odd fallen planets are called Satania. We're living in this fallen group. It's part of the reason we have this troubled world. Earth is the most troubled out of them. Soon we'll be lifted up out of its darkness. And what was interesting was a vision that I had the other night, which showed a bright light and four powerful beings being let down into darkness, which happened to be where I was. And I could see, of course, the light, and they didn't care about me. They had another mission, and I think I'm going to be seeing some cleanup work going on here on our planet. And that happens to be with moving out some of these fallen beings who are going to be disarmed. Because the armament that is being used against us is more one of a spiritual nature, or philosophic nature.
You said they're going to be disarmed?
Yeah, disarming these beings that have been trying to rule our planet, stating their case.
Mm-hmm.
But all they have been able to prove is how false their philosophy is, one of open godlessness or false godliness, and how that just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Every time they get into power, every time they try to institute their philosophy, it ends up with horrid problems and hard works upon ourselves. Terrible, terrible man's inhumanity to man.
It's been like that for longer than our history goes back.
Probably, but yeah, there's prehistory, and then there's celestial history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ones that which we're interfacing into the celestial history. We're just a tiny little smudge in it, tiny little speck of time in it, but at a very key and very important place, because this is where Creator Son, Christ Jesus, Christ Michael, Creator of the universe, became human, became mortal in it. And he happened to be human, and he happened to be on Earth, and as a result, we're quite a special group of people on Earth. Quite loved and set apart in their minds. Even to be, I was sitting there with a room filled with all kinds of celestials, different levels of beings, different types. And then I was the one that was called royalty. And there was only one reason that could have been, because I was the same mortal election as the Creator became. So that's the reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully someday they'll see us when we're not fighting with each other. Human beings, that is.
Yes, and they hope to see that we're at the proper stage of development for that to end. If they come in any sooner than we're ready for it, we'll look like an invasion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the point at all. They lose everything. It is not yet. That's the story I get right now. So I will have a time, I believe, which will say that very close. Time is very near. But right now, it's not yet.
Mm-hmm.
Curtis, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just my head is spinning with the whole big picture of just even you doing these recordings, and it's interesting to stay on one subject matter and explore that subject matter as well as you are. And that's all I can think about, is that it's an amazing subject that they're out there and watching us and communicating with you.
Well, more important, we have to realize, first of all, the secret that was hidden from all the ages, this mystery,
mm-hmm.
and that it's actually quite the opposite, that watching or that thought adjuster is inside of us, is given to every being brought into the world, and that enlightenment and that attunement
mm-hmm.
is offered to every being, and the celestials themselves want us to realize that, and that is something that is not unique for every one of us. It is what we have, and that's what is trying to be trounced out from us, covered up by the powers that be, that need us not to be in touch with the celestial sources, various beings, angels you might call, as well as the first source himself, through the nature of the first source itself, who lives within us. The thought adjuster, the divine fractal in us, that gives us the divinity of being. And so we participate in that divine nature. That is the important thing. And if we ever get off of that track, that's exactly where those who want to rule this world by deception and deceit need. They want us off that track. If we're on that track, they cannot deceive us. There's just too much. The light will shine too bright, and you'll never have the darkness they need to run their hidden affairs.
Well, we'll just keep that light bright.
Yeah. And send the warm energy. It's one of the most powerful things that we have. It's not our energy. We just send it. We're sort of like, we've got, it's like a fireman with the fire hose. That water in the fire hose isn't coming from the fireman. He's just directing it. And that's what one of the things we've got to discover is just how much energy we've got. Just turn it on and let it loose and we won't run out. It's tremendous. It's not ours, but we get to direct it. And direct it we should.
Yeah, before we started, I mentioned I had some help with my thought adjuster. Oh, now's the time, he said. And it was.
It was, yeah. You gave me the description. It was like I would normally think that would be the absolute wrong time. That's too early to call 5 a.m. in the morning to reach a person. And
oh, it was 17:52, so it was almost 5 in the evening.
Oh, in the evening, yeah. That's
5
too late.
In the evening his time, but it was almost 6 o'clock here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, now? And I just said, okay, I'll do it.
And that's an example of the unfair advantage of being in tune with your thought adjuster.
Mm-hmm.
Practical, everyday experience.
And we're happy to hear your mother's spirits are back smiling.
Yeah.
And glad to see you again.
Sure is.
You'll have to ask her about that time, long time ago, and see if she can come up with things she hasn't said before.
It may very well be. I don't know.
Never know. But she remembers, I'm sure, that evening. Must have been an evening to remember that just will always be there. But this is after our hour's gone, and it's nice having you back again, Michael, and good talking to you, and we'll talk to you again next week, and have a good week.
Okay, and I hope everyone else does also. Keep in tune, not with me, but with your thought adjuster.
And as they say, we'll keep looking up.
Yeah, and look within.
All right, look within. All right, Michael.
Okay.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Bye.